Boys and girls, do you like listening to the fellas on the Sucks podcast? Do you like candy and toys? How about puppies? Well, for every episode you listen to or share, we will send you one mystery package full of who knows what. Keep listening. At the end of this episode, we'll tell you how to claim your mystery package.
That's right. It's gamification day on the Sucks podcast. Hit the theme. Welcome back. I am your host, Brad.
And I am Dave.
And with us, as always, is producer Joe. Good morning, fellas.
Good morning, Brad.
This is a podcast where we talk about design, intentional and otherwise, and all the ways that UX,
user experience design,
impact us every day. We started this podcast as a way to talk about why things were made the way they are and where those design decisions might have gone off the rails. We are lovers, not experts of UX
design. Lovers.
But we're learning. And along the way, we get to have some amazing conversations with incredible people and deepen our understanding of what makes really great or really terrible UX design.
All right. Hey, welcome aboard, guys.
Welcome.
Hey, Brad, I think we're going to break format today. What do you think? I think we should break format.
I think we should.
Because we've got a great guest here today. And, you know, I think he can join us in for some of this geeky banter. What do you think?
I think absolutely. We usually start this podcast with like a few minutes, just, you know, geek talk between us three. But when we have an incredible guest like we do today, why not just invite him? Invite him to join in, especially since he's here. My friend Julius Harper is a writer, producer, television executive specializing in kids content, and a game designer and producer. Julius and I had a lot of fun developing games and experiences together at the Walt Disney Company over a number of years. His White Whale, gamifying the overall guest experience within Disney's games and websites. Welcome to the Sucks Podcast, Julius.
Hey guys, how's it going?
We are so excited to have you here, man.
Going well.
Hey man, it's good to see you.
So Julius, in addition to your accomplishments as an executive at some of the greatest companies in the world, like Disney, DreamWorks, Netflix, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in 1997, Julius Harper, rewinding back the clock to 1997, you were Nintendo Power's game designer of the future. You can Google Polygon and Julius Harper for that full story, and I recommend that our listeners and users do. And Julius, you know that there was zero chance that I wasn't going to bring this up on the podcast today, right?
Thank you so much, Brad.
You're welcome. I know you love this. But no, leading into some geeky banter here, so you've been a gamer for a long time. Talk to us about your experience and history as a gamer first.
Games? I think my first game system was probably the Nintendo Entertainment System. That was mine. I was an 80s kid for sure. My dad had, I want to say, it wasn't the Famicom. It was ColecoVision or something like that. Yeah, back in the day, which he used to play a lot of games on. So
Your
much
dad.
So.
Hold on, your dad. Okay, I feel old.
my first game system was a TRS-80 from Radio Shack. Yeah.
Right, mine was the Atari, of course. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Julius. I'm sorry. I'm just saying how old I am.
Sorry. Was Asteroid, I want to say, on ColecoVision, or was it Atari? I'm not sure.
Commodore.
I think it was both.
Okay.
Well, I could tell you from experience that it was on the Atari 2600 because that's what I had, and I had Asteroids for sure.
My first big foray into gaming was really the Nintendo. My parents brought home the original NES. I remember playing the original Super Mario Brothers and like going nuts on that for like weeks and weeks and weeks. Probably, again, a Mario kid. One of my most formative experiences as a gamer was probably Super Mario Brothers 3. Like the puzzles and the freedom and the transformation and the fun that that game kind of just brought to just the gaming experience was wild. Kind of sucked that they didn't have a save option though. So like, and the game was so big that you had to like pause it in World 4 and let the system like chill for 45 minutes. Cause if you tried to play it all the way through, the system would overheat.
Oh my God.
And I know that from experience because it happened to be several times.
Did you try blowing in the cartridge first? Maybe that.
Oh yeah, okay. Absolutely. It was totally that generation.
Yeah, I think we all had that experience too. Mom, I can't come down to dinner. I got to at least get to this point where I can hit pause because I can't stop and save. I got to at least beat this level so I can.
Yeah, it was a legitimate excuse back then because like, you know.
Now not so much because my son tries that on me. I'm like, oh, there's a save station. You just need to go to that save station and you're fine. We didn't have save stations, okay?
Right. Yeah, back in my day.
Well, dude, I'm so happy that we get to talk about video games a little bit on this podcast because we've done 474 episodes so far.
Oh, nice.
And this is our first chance to really talk about it in any kind of way. So can't think of a better guest than you to have on here to talk about gamification and maybe a little bit of geeky talk about games.
I got a serious question for you, Julius.
Sure.
The Power Glove. Did you have the Power Glove?
I did.
Yes. Me too.
I did. Oh, my gosh.
In all of its failed glory, huh?
Yeah, with the little sensors, and you're trying to hit the button on the arm pad.
Yeah. Oh, let me ask you, did you spend more time like just running around, like acting out like Star Wars or something with it than you did actually using it for a video game?
Yeah, it was the game was in my brain at that point because the compatibility with the actual stuff was always a huge problem. But the game glove takes me way, way, way back.
Power pad was my big device, which we all learned that if you just smack the pad faster than you could run faster than you could actually run on it.
Exactly.
The power. I remember that. Yeah. Nintendo was always ahead of the curve. I mean, think about that. I mean, what the Power Glove was pretty much just the Wii.
Exactly. They had the Zapper too. Like they were all trying to figure out how to make these other peripherals fit into the larger game.
Oh my
experience.
God. They had so many, like there was, like if you remember the Pogo Ball, they actually had something called like the Rock and Roller that you could actually stand on.
Mm.
They had.
I still don't know what that robot does.
Robbie?
Oh, yeah, Robbie.
What was he supposed to do?
Played one puzzle game. That's it.
I don't know. He's a great character in Smash Brothers. That's all I know.
True story. Yeah, I think all our wives and significant others have just left us. so you guys want to play some games?
Yeah, come over to my house. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Getting serious, Julius. Why don't you go ahead and walk us through your professional history a bit?
Well, sure. I produced games and digital experiences for the Walt Disney Company for about a decade. As well as I built out the content strategy over at Netflix for their interactive kids content. So if you're thinking about like, you know, the Boss Baby interactive, I came in a little bit after the Puss in Boots interactive. I was just kind of in that space between like content, like storytelling content, and how to evolve that in a way to include the user. So I am not a trained UX designer, but I've been in the space for many, many years, and I've worked with experts from mobile gaming to interactive video to VR. And I've just always been fascinated by this kind of stuff, especially gamification, since I first started to learn about it in the time of Zynga. If you guys remember Farmville back in the day, that codified a lot of this sort of stuff. And I've just been, you know, a fan and fascinated about it ever since.
I love it. Well, how do you feel about the state of interactive content in general, like outside of the, you know, de facto video game worlds? But when you're looking at the Netflixes and other, you know, interactive video experiences, how do you think it's going? Do you think that the industry is on track to have this be something substantial?
I mean, I think that interactive content is probably in a similar space to the adoption curve for VR. So like, I'm sure that there was some iteration of VR that first started maybe in the 70s. And then there was another like jump at it in maybe the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had like the Virtual Boy, which I think was maybe early 90s. And with each like new cycle, things got better, but it never really caught on in that, like, you know, that big way. I mean, I even have, I have an Oculus that I got for, I think, Christmas that I sometimes play with. And that's the new one, right? And the experiences in there are like amazing and different, but it hasn't had the same adoption curve as an iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. Like that thing has completely reshaped society from top to bottom in the course of 15 years or something like that. Yeah. You know, it's been really crazy. So when I think of interactive content overall, I kind of think of it in that context where it's like, there's still a lot of possibility. I think your best in class experience, you know, that has been there is probably some of the games that were done by Telltale Games, those interactive story games. Oh, yeah. Mass Effect, I think, was probably pretty good. And I'd be remiss to not mention Netflix Bandersnatch, which I played a small part in. Mm-hmm. That kind of brought that to a much larger audience, but I still think it hasn't quite been cracked. And I think it's primarily for cost reasons. Yeah. It costs a lot of money to make all of those different paths. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though the entertainment industry right now is in an expansionary period vis-a-vis like spend, like people are throwing down billions of dollars for, you know, for these slates of content. Companies are still very price sensitive when it comes to, it's like, what's our cost per minute of production? Yeah. You know, and if you throw something at them, or it's like, okay, so this is going to be 16 hours worth of footage, and you're like, and only what percentage of people are going to see all 16 hours? Mm-hmm. It's still a bit of a challenge when it comes to kind of making that financially make sense. Mm-hmm. But I think there's some exciting stuff in real time animation that might make that a little bit more feasible.
Yeah, cool stuff about that.
And then game engines, and just in general, you know, like I think there's a new company that's got started up by a bunch of ex-Telltale folks that are kind of playing in that space to try and see if they can bring those cost per minute down and to make the interaction paths a little bit more rewarding, you know, speaking that's of cool. gamification, right?
Yeah. I know some of those Telltale guys, some of the founders of that company, and they really do care deeply about this stuff. So I just give a shout out to, you know, anyone who is from that Telltale camp. By the way, my daughter and I have been playing a lot of Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Nice.
That's released like a recent version of that. Well, recent meaning within the last 7 years. But super fun stuff.
It's really crazy, though, when you talk back to how far VR was. I remember as a kid in the 80s doing a VR booth. And it's funny because I recently found the ticket from it in a Jack Kerouac on the road book. And I'm like, I don't remember doing this. Right. And I'm like, maybe I'm still there.
Maybe you're still in the Matrix.
That would explain so much.
Maybe this life is there. Yeah. And then in film school, I've tried to talk these guys into a million crazy different film ideas and ventures. One of them was, let's get the rights to choose your own adventure. And let's go on the internet and make a choose your own adventure style thing. And that was what, 2000, 2001? So it's just crazy to me that like there's been such a long span of time. Why has this not cracked? You know what I mean? Like, why are we not all wearing our headsets and just like doing crazy stuff in public?
Killer apps. There hasn't been a killer app.
Exactly.
I mean, pretty simple. Yeah. I mean, there's been some really cool stuff, but nothing that people have to experience. But I will say that, you know, in the favor of the industry, I think the industry is well primed to be receptive. Like, people know what it is. They're just waiting for that thing, thing that they have to do, and then they'll jump on it.
That's true. Good point. Yeah. Good point. We need implants, you know. I think that's the key, right?
Well, that's what Julius was proposing to Nintendo in 1997, right?
Yeah. I might want to, after further consideration, I might want to backpedal on the brain implants, the Elon Musk Neuralink stuff. But when I was 14, it seemed like a cool idea. So, you know, but pop-up ads in your brain, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, that's a great transition point because we're talking games, which is great, but it also leads us into today's main topic, which is gamification, which we'll get into right after the break. David!
Hey, Brad!
Did you know that... Wait, what? What is that racket going on?
Oh, Brad, I'm up to my neck in cats again. It's my business. It's my personal business.
With kitten declawing business.
Yeah, the kitten declawing, but I don't have enough anymore, Brad. I was hacked, and all my finances. I lost all the money, so now I got all these cats that
David.
People gave me.
Meow.
But I don't have the fingernail stuff to put on them.
David. So you are still maintaining your kitten declawing business?
Yes, sir.
I have to ask you this: are you using ExpressVPN?
Hey, sorry to interrupt our fake ad read. I thought it was going great, but. If you're a real sponsor and like what you hear and want to contact our ad sales department, or if you're just a fan, visit ourpodsucks.com. That's ourpodsux.com to find out more. And by our ad sales department, I of course mean producer Joe. Ourpodsucks.com. Now, back to the fake ad read currently in progress.
PN.
Nah, you told me about this, Brad. I didn't know what it was. You talked about it, you know, me being exposed. I thought
now
you were talking
exposed.
About...
you're exposed. You're compromised.
Yeah.
People know the personal identity of all these kittens that you're declawing and their owners and your personal credit card information, all because you didn't use ExpressVPN.
You know, I think it was one of the cats, Brad.
Meow.
The cats hacked you?
Yeah. The cat hackers.
Cat.
It's the... It's the orange tabby.
It's always the orange tabby.
It's always the orange tabby, Brad.
All right. I'm going to remind you again, you have to use ExpressVPN. Visit ExpressVPN.com. Whether you're shopping from your desk or just connecting at a cafe, you have to keep your personal information more private and secure. And ExpressVPN will let you do that. Download ExpressVPN with 3 months free to keep all of your devices safe and secure. And Dave, if you're going to continue to declaw kittens on the side, unsanctioned and unlicensed, you're going to need a VPN.
Yeah.
ExpressVPN.
No orange tabbies.
Meow.
And we're back with today's main topic, gamification.
Gamification. All right, Brad, I hope we get into this. The term gamify, it's pretty recent, right? But the concept is not new, and definitely not only for digital, yeah? A gaming executive named Nathan Lands coined the phrase only in 2010.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much in 2010, that became a marketing buzzword. And it seemed like for years, I couldn't get through one meeting without talking about gamification and gamifying.
Yeah, it was like, it's going viral. It's kind of like that, right?
Yeah. Julius, we were probably working together, or we would be working together pretty closely right after that. It really was, it became a marketing buzzword. And, you know, people used that and misused that pretty solidly for a minimum of 5 years in every meeting. And then maybe slowly started to taper off after that, in my experience.
Now it's the metaverse. Everything's the metaverse.
Yeah. How do we gamify the metaverse?
So you guys are dialed into this a lot more than producer Joe and I. So Julius, to start off, can you just help our users understand what we mean when we talk about gamification?
Sure. Yeah. So gamification, it's really about taking the systems and the practices that you might normally associate with games, you know, points, high scores, unlocking achievements, combos, team battle, stuff like that, and really applying it to user experience loops. It's like the art and science of making those kind of repeated UX tasks, things that you have to do anyways, fun in order to kind of drive more engagement. I guess a formal definition would be like integrating game dynamics into your site, service, community content, or campaign in order to drive participation. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Who doesn't want to level up every chance they can get?
Exactly. Yep.
Exactly. So I've experienced this mostly in marketing campaigns, Julius. It's not always about marketing though, right?
No, I mean, it can definitely be used for marketing, but it's really more about human psychology. Honestly, it's about tapping into our dopamine centers, figuring out what motivates us, whether that's something intrinsic or extrinsic, and utilizing those paths to drive a specific action. I think it might help to kind of describe this with a couple examples, though, because it is a little bit abstract. It's primarily in the UX space, but it crosses over with UI. And then obviously you've got a little bit of psychology in there. So it's a little blobby. So by way of some examples, maybe this will help clarify. Sure. So a basic example of gamification might be the rewards points that you get on a credit card, right? The more you spend, the more points you get. And then you redeem those points for prizes. Now that's very simple, but if you think about it, that is 100% the same principle behind earning tickets at an arcade. Like Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Right? another example might be your Apple Watch steps or your Fitbit, right? It's checking your steps, your calorie count. It has a stand counter. And you know how the UI looks? It's a loop, right? And you kind of want to close that loop. The more steps you take, the closer you get to closing that loop out, right? It's like, oh, you're getting close. Just, I got to stand up one more time. I've got to take 1,000 more steps. And then I did it. I leveled up.
Right? I just got that alert yesterday on my Android phone. It's like, you are about to meet the heart points for American Heart Association, blah, 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 which is basically is my phone saying, you're old. You notice the theme here.
It links you right over to AARP, and guess what? Right. Gamify the hell out of AARP.
Which is also gamification, right? Because then I get that Denny's meal.
There you go. Yes. Yeah. Once you're part of that exclusive diamond level group, right? You get like those special perks and stuff. Right. That's another big one for gamification too. It's exclusivity and identity, right? Mm. Look at kids who play a lot of StarCraft. There are different leagues that specify how good you are at that game. And it's like, if you're only Silver League, you're trash. You have to get to like the Double Diamond League in order to be like, you know, taken seriously. So people are competing and trying to get to the top of that status hierarchy, right? So you can put that in the context of the game. You can put that in a lot of other contexts, but what's driving it is this desire to achieve mastery, to show off, and to gain points. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just like anything else, gamification has positive applications and applications that are definitely nefarious. Mm-hmm. And many or most probably fall somewhere right in the middle. As always, as this is the Sucks podcast, I thought we could start with some examples that suck.
For sure.
Okay. So we've got some bullet points here. These are examples that unquestionably do not serve the greater good. Camel Bucks or Marlboro. I can't even say that word.
That is Marlboro a mouthful.
Marlboro Miles. Let's gamify cancer. Yay.
Sure. Got to give credit to Julius on that note. He added it to the script, which is brilliant. Let's gamify cancer.
I love it. Do we each want to take one of these? Well, so it's not just me.
Just real quick, Joe, you and I have spent many hours talking about this concept because, look, it was fun. Do you guys remember this? Like, my dad was a smoker. Joe, I think your dad was a smoker too. And they would send these catalogs. And the point that I'm bringing up here is that this is awful and evil.
Yeah.
It was fun, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't evil.
It wasn't my dad, but it was me. I was a smoker. My mom was a smoker. Oh, okay. And we would actually, my friends were smokers. We would actually collect them and get, like, you get things, decent things. Like, honestly, you could get a pool table. If you had like, I think it was like 100,000 Marlboro Miles, you could get a pool table.
Wow.
Right.
So that's like crazy. Literally talk about gamifying something. It was like, you could get a real thing, you know, dartboard, like at the bottom level is like dartboards and like,
I remember whitewater rafts, like really, really cool stuff and coolers and electronics and all this. And it came in this catalog that was clearly designed. And I have to be honest here, for kids.
Oh, yeah.
These programs were built for kids.
Of course.
To convert them into smokers. Children into smokers. I swear to God, that was the intent of the campaign. Somewhere in a boardroom, they knew this and they said it out loud.
Absolutely. Let's make the transition from kids to old folks. Slot machines. All right. your poor, your old grandma out there in Vegas. These chance engines are big in gamification, big time surprise and delight with the lights going off and whoa, you won. And what did you win? You know, you spent like, $50 and you won a few quarters spilling out the bottom. It's pretty effective. Skinner boxes in general, Julius, can we key this concept up to you? What's a Skinner box?
Sure. Yeah. So this is one of these concepts that comes from psychology, essentially.
And B.F. Skinner?
Yeah. Keep me honest here because I am not a psychologist, but the basic idea is that you could put a rat inside of a box and the rat would have, I believe, either one or two buttons that it could get, one for food and one that would give it a shot of dopamine. Basically, I think it was like they gave the rats a little bit of cocaine or something like that. And essentially, once the rat was able to make the reward, the dopamine reward loop between I press this button and I feel high, the rat would just do that forever. And then it would like starve.
Wow.
So basically, they figured out a way to hack the rat's reward center just to do this thing that provided no actual intrinsic good to the rat. But it felt good. So therefore, the rat just kept doing it over and over and
until it died.
Until it died. Like it wouldn't eat, wouldn't sleep, wouldn't have sex. All of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs was out the window,
right?
Because we could do this thing over and over again.
So which casino is this Skinner box in?
Circus.
Okay.
Actually, I want to also just say something real quickly because I realize I am on a podcast and podcasts go on the internet and people do research on claims that are made on the internet. And the operant conditioning chamber, the Skinner box that we were talking about, actually, it was food pellets, not crack cocaine. just want to make that
so
clear.
So they get fat, they get overweight, yes. They don't starve to death. This is Julius. I'm glad you did that because typically I do research after the show when something is said, and I probably would have just cut that out. So now I could leave it in.
Yeah. But the point stands that it's like the reward over everything else.
Absolutely.
But it's the basic concept. And again, it's obviously these are all tools and they can be used for good or for ill. But once we were able to identify that Pavlovian response that could be driven in rats and then therefore humans, which share a lot of this basic biological and physiological underpinnings of animals, where it's like, okay, we can use this. Think about the anxiety that you feel when your phone vibrates in your pocket and you get a text message and then you get another one and another one and another one. Like the anxiety goes up because you have to respond to it. And it's because your dopamine center has essentially been plugged into a similar loop. Thankfully, you know, you're not doing crack cocaine all day, but it's
speak
essentially
for yourself.
Well,
it's also not completely separate. This goes back to our dark patterns and the FOMO, like, you want those dopamine hits. You're addicted to the point of, you know, superseding like the important things in life. You're addicted to the dopamine hits.
Yeah.
You know, you're stuck in the dark patterns. You get stuck in these like gamified.
This was what you were talking about earlier with the cigarettes as well, where it's like, okay, smoking is objectively bad for your body. Like, okay, but it feels good. And if that's not enough, you might get a pool table if you smoke enough, right?
If you survive long enough.
If you survive long enough, right.
Yeah. And in that pool table, while you're playing pool, you'll smoke more cigarettes.
Exactly.
All right, let's keep it going. Credit card points. You know, Julius, you brought this up earlier, but the more you spend, the more points you get. You trade in those points for travel or fabulous things or dining or all the things that are sexy and cool and fun. I think this is fine in principle, but here's the thing. Much like the cigarettes, this is designed not for the people who can afford it, not for the people who can really benefit. It's designed for it's designed to be inequitable. It's designed to prey on the people who are going to fall for such schemes and then, you know, spend more and more and then.
Yeah. Or anything like this. You know, you get those like eight months free on your furniture. Right. And if you don't pay it off in those 8 months, then all that debt, all the interest gets slapped on at the end. Yeah. Right. It's one of these things that works great for, you know, the well-heeled, but everybody else gets caught in these traps.
And just to repeat the point, it works great for the people who can afford it. It's not designed for them. It's designed to take advantage of the people who can't afford it.
Gamifying work. Brad, you put this on here. You want to talk about this a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the example that I found in my research was that the Walt Disney Company, again, chose to gamify one of their hotel's laundry service, the staff. Not the guests, not the, you know, the patrons, but the staff. Specifically in how they're doing their laundry in the laundry room in the bowels of this hotel. They've got this giant room with all these washers, and they have screens with leaderboards. The leaderboards communicated to the staff and how efficient they were, how quick they were at doing the laundry. So it was designed to reward people who were doing the best, but what it did is they wanted to make it have, you know, increase efficiency.
Instead, it
did not work. It created a needlessly competitive workspace with a fear-driven culture. If you're at the bottom of that leaderboard, what does that mean? Probably means you're fired, or at least that's the message that it's communicating with that. So that's an example of, you know, maybe it was a good intention, I suppose. I really don't think it was a good intention, though.
Okay.
So anyway, gamifying work, probably not a great idea.
All right. How about, do we want to get into this teams, tribes, artificial competition to serve corporate overlords? That sounds a little heavy-handed, Brad.
I think that was Julius.
Oh, was that you, Julius? what do we want to talk about there?
Well, it's basically the same kind of thing that Brad was pointing to, where you got to realize with these systems and these tools that are being put together, they're being put in place in order to benefit a certain strategy or business goal. And you have to be able to look at that from kind of a dispassionate perspective before deciding, ideally, whether or not you want to participate within the system. Because once you get onto that treadmill, you can very quickly get caught up in the gears of these things. And then you can find yourself in situations where you're operating against your own interests, right? So in the case of gamifying work, like, yeah, it might be stressful to the everyday person working in the office where, you know, our team is working against their team so that we can get the bonus at the end of the month or, you know, whatever the prize is. But from the perspective of the people who are running the business, you're increasing productivity. So that's a net positive, right? So that's the thing that you just always have to kind of keep aware of. It's like these systems, again, can be used for good or for ill, right. But it's just understanding motivational psychology and getting a real handle on what it's being used for.
Right.
Let's pause on that real bit. I'm going to break script here for a second.
Yeah, because
it brings it to the heart of gamification. Mm-hmm. Right. Like to me, we have mentioned anxiety a couple of times, right? With those notifications popping up or the Skinner boxes or all these things, it'll work. Is anxiety an unfortunate byproduct of gamification, or is it the point? Right.
Great point.
I would think that gamification, you know, we're talking about what sucks because it's the Sucks podcast, right? But Julius, you probably want to get to the good things as a gamer, as somebody who makes games, that there's got to be a good side to this gamification. But I wonder, even in the good side, is it anxiety producing?
It's actually funny that you mentioned that. So there's this concept in game design where the most, I guess, fun or at least engaging games balance two things. It is a sense of reward and achievement with a sense of frustration and challenge. Mm. And when you're able to keep the user in that space that is just challenged enough to keep trying, but not so much that they decide not to, and not too easy where they just blow through everything and then they get bored. That is, I think they call that flow, but it's essentially that anxious state where it's like you have to have heightened awareness and heightened engagement because you want to do the best that you can, but you're not so overwhelmed that you feel like there's nothing that you can do. Right. Now that feels fun, you know, if you want to beat a boss in Mario or really want to go hard in Dark Souls or something like that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a mode of expression that you want to have in your everyday life forever. Because humans are not built for, you know, continuous stress. So it goes back to that. What's the context?
Julius,
what's
I'm glad that you mentioned Dark Souls, because when you started talking, I wanted to bring up Elden Ring. Are you familiar with this game? It's the latest of the Dark Souls game. I've been playing it, and in real time, like a couple of days ago, I had to make a conscious decision to put it away because I was the rat. And it became really clear after probably spending too many hours with this game, this really frustrating game, that I'm just keeping on hitting those pellets for that little dopamine kick, right? And I started to realize it was not making me happy. You know, that little dopamine was not enough to offset the anxiety, and then also the kind of like depression of wasting my time.
I'm amazed you could still do it, Brad. Like, I've been trying to play this Metroid Dread game. We've talked about this game, right?
Sure.
It's so frustrating and stressful, and I play like maybe in 15-20 minutes, and I'm like, I hit one boss, I'm like, nope. Like, I got so much shit to do today. I can't do this.
Yeah, I got further than you did. I got to the final boss.
Whoa.
And I was, you know, by that time, I was already pretty frustrated. And I stopped.
What?
It would have taken me a couple hours probably to crack that boss.
You got to beat that, Brad.
Dude.
Get your pellet.
I'm boggled by you guys even going into these like open world games. It just scares me because I'm like, how many things, how many accomplishments do you have to achieve? How many places do you have to go? Like put me on a path. I'm like, I want to beat level one, beat level two, beat level three, and I'm done. These open world things are like,
well, Dread is the latter, Joe, but the open worlds, I hear you on, because I used to play like Age of Empires. You guys ever play that?
Sure.
Like with my best friend, we'd play that for hours. I tried to do that like, I don't know, like a year ago. And I was like, oh, whoa, this is way too much. There's a lot of thought that has to go into this.
How many side missions and extra trophies and extra like.
Yeah, but see what you're talking about right there is another one of these psychological gamification, you know, techniques. Yeah. So what you're outlining is the desire to be a completionist. Mm-hmm. You want to get all of the things. You want to collect all of the stamps. You want to get all of the Pokemon. You'd want to, you know, that sort of thing. There's a certain subset of gamer who is motivated in that particular way, mm-hmm. right? So if you can create an infinite set of things that you can never quite collect, or there's always one more, or there's always a super rare one, you can attach all sorts of desirable user actions to that, like loot crates, you know? Yeah. Oh, you're not buying the specific thing to complete your collection. You're buying the chance to maybe get the rare thing that will complete your LOL collection or whatever it is. It's all the same basic thing. There's an innate drive in some people to want to say, I completed the set. Yeah. So you can use gamification in order to exploit that mental loop, that dopamine loop, to get people to do all kinds of stuff. Just another thing that this makes me think of as well is just, okay, so we joke like it's video games, it's boys and, you know, and you're nerds. Okay, sure. but my wife used to play the hell out of Candy Crush, which is, and then Blossom Blast. Yep. It's all the same stuff. It's the same thing.
Right.
You're sitting there and she's so frustrated. She's literally, it's like 8:30 at night. I'm like trying to chill out, watch some TV. She's screaming at her phone because she can't beat the level. And I'm like, and she's like, I hate this. And I'm like, oh, you're in the flow state. Like she's exactly right there at just enough frustration to continue. Right. And not quit the game. It sounds like for Brad in Elden Ring, like he hit that moment before the last boss was like, this isn't worth it. Right. But for a lot of folks, they get caught up in that loop. And this is also, this is going against the whole thing about it's not necessarily gendered, because there are games that appeal primarily to female audiences. But games in general are built this way because by and large, boys' brains tend to respond to systems like this, right? Mm. Tell me what Boy Scout badges, right? Martial arts. And again, it's not exclusive to boys. It's not what I'm saying. Right. But like, there's this sort of thing where it's like, well, here's a place where I can feel mastery and achievement. No one can take it away from me because I got that Diamond League rating. I got that green belt. Like I have it. And there's a lot to be, there's a lot of pride that's tied up in that. And that's good. But then if you're using that to, again, I keep going back to the pool table, maybe not the best usage.
I would just add on to that, you know, a lot of that, you know, that gender stuff is a byproduct of it being, you know, a boys club. You know, I don't think I'm speaking out of school here to say that the gaming industry, you know, as a whole, especially historically,
is
predominantly run by men, a lot of white men designing these games. So that's why that, you know, that industry is continues to be that way. Just quick aside, you know, I look for games to play with my daughter all the time. I mentioned Sam and Max. She gets so disappointed when there's not an option to play as a female character. Like we actively look for games that have female characters and it's hard. Yep. Like what is it really? Percentage? Like 2% or something like that.
it's still a thing because there is that perception that games are just for boys. And like that's clearly not the case. Right. But it's one of those blind spot sort of situations where if folks open their minds up a little bit and realize like there's a whole other market over here, right, that might be interested in playing this game.
Yeah.
But for historical reasons, that's still not yet the case.
Dave, why don't you keep us going?
Yeah. Well, you sent me a note, Brad, that you want to jump into capitalism. I don't know where we're going with this one, but it is a big one. Maybe it's its own episode. Let's turn democracy into a sporting event and pick our ride or die teams. How's it going, Brad?
It's going great, don't you think? You guys think that this is going well for us?
Tell me how this is gamification.
So capitalism, capital, right? Money. Money is a point system. Mm-hmm. Period, full stop. Like it is, okay? And it gives you status. It gives you access to customizable tools and items, right? Mm-hmm. That you can utilize. And it's also It's a competitive kind of team-based thing as well, yeah. right? So as right. Brad was kind of alluding to in the political side of the spectrum, where it's like, okay, well, take a game like Fortnite or take some other like kind of team-based battle games. It's like when you're in the heat of it, right? It's your team versus the other team, right? It speaks a little bit to what we talked about before with the teams inside of companies as well. If this department is competing against that department, there's a driver of human psychology that is around what you call identity or tribal groups, essentially. And once you start to identify with the tribal group, yeah. you start to then look at other people outside of that tribal group as potential competitors or people that, you know, you might have to mess up in order to get to where your goal is, right? Yeah. And so that's great if you want to drive a whole lot of, shall we say, interaction and competition towards a shared goal.
Right.
But if it's creating a sense of scarcity or a sense of like that group is going to destroy us, like that sort of stuff, when it starts to get out of hand, then it gets really ugly, a la right now. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. but it's all based on, again, another one of those gamification driven. And again, human yeah. psychology driven systems where it's like,
yeah.
I am now part of this group. And my yeah. interests are aligned with this group vis-a-vis the other team.
Yeah. yeah. You know, Julie, yeah. it's really interesting that you added capitalism to this script. And mm-hmm. I, in my Freudian slip, just like jumped right onto how that translates into politics. So I think that's telling. That's probably like different than what you meant, but that's where I jumped to from that. Yeah. No, I think that's interesting.
Yeah. That is. Well, I mean, it's connecting, right? Sports.
Right.
Teams.
Yeah. Right. 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 Real quick, Dave, for the, you know, sort of the democracy angle, the government angle. Yeah, I do think that, you know, the fact that this is now like a sporting event, a nationwide sporting event, you know, pitting two teams against each other is cleverly designed, let's say. Again, I think that this is intentional design.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
To get people
divide
to
and conquer.
Divide and conquer to get people to, in this case, vote against their interests.
Right, right.
And I think it's working well, depending on your point of view, spectacularly well.
Yeah.
Depending, if yeah. you design the system, box, it's working everybody. Great.
It is.
It's a giant it Skinner box.
I'm interested in getting into, for the first time ever on the Sucks podcast, I am interested in getting to the good stuff and not that's which sucks because – I'm right. getting a little scared here and sad.
Okay. All right. Okay. You're right, Dave. You know, let's move on here because not all of gamification is inherently evil. Some of the stuff that we talked about, I think, is you can't argue that it's evil. That cigarette example, pure evil. Mm. But some, you know, some gamification elements are designed to promote greater good and positivity. Even those, though, they might be built inherently on a system of shaming as a gamification concept, but still there's positive impact. Like the few examples that we have, the first is Boy Scout badges. Boy Scout badges is the earliest example that I could find of a gamification element, you know, in
That's
our
good.
Research.
That's yeah, a good it's one. Good.
It's
there's
positive.
There's not a downside to that, you know?
I think
I got all those
positive.
Squares. I learned to like tie a knot, to light a fire.
Do we have any
stuff.
Former scouts here besides
yeah.
yourself, Dave?
Yeah,
anybody else a scout?
This, what am I doing? I don't know. I'm someone with the hands.
I think you're trying to do a wee blow.
We there's like
thing.
I don't know. Something, you know.
Joseph, you? No?
No, I was never a scout. I think I was a weird offshoot for like a week. But
that was called a cult.
Yes, it was. It was. But I was smart enough to get out.
Okay. Boy Scout badges. I think that's probably positive. Okay. I mean, I'm sure we could nitpick about it. And certainly yep. there's lots of nitpick about the scouts themselves, but let's keep that in the positive.
But the health thing, right. the health thing we talked about, like the mm-hmm. all those things you have Peloton on here. We talked about the Apple Watch. Those right. have got to be positive, right? I mean, because you're mm-hmm. if you're trying to get more points, more miles, and you're losing weight and your heart's getting healthier, I can't see a negative side to that.
Not really, other than maybe the social media as a whole. You know, right. like a lot of people post this stuff on social for bragging rights.
The yeah, sharing well, that's, aspect.
That, that's
and,
a separate thing.
Yeah. Okay, we'll keep that as a separate yeah. thing. Positive. People are getting healthy and they're using gamification to make people healthier.
Right. Gamification is a tool. I mean, I personally consider it to be a morally neutral tool. Yes. It's how you use it that gives it that positive or negative charge. And right. what really determines whether it's good or not is to what end? Mm-hmm. What are we using this thing for?
Just
so
like
I think, right, to Brad and Dave, as you were saying, kind of like the scout badges example, it's like, okay, a kid is learning self-reliance. They're learning how to fish and how to tie a knot and, you know, all that sort of stuff seems good to me. So if you put that into a gaming system where essentially the desired user experience is to build up a useful skill,
yeah,
sounds great, right? But if you attach these sorts of same things to other things that aren't as great, then you kind of get into that same weird space. Fitness, right. Same thing. It's like, yeah, we all should exercise more. So if there's a system that can get us to exercise a bit more, it's great. I will say that I agree. You can question which motivational tool is being used to drive that particular behavior. And you might be able to, you know, critique that a little bit. But again, the most important thing is really, to what end are we using these tools to achieve what?
Yeah. I think when it gets down to, when it becomes monetization, that's where we start to get off the rails.
I think you could even monetize. I mean, Brad has Simply Piano on here. Mm-hmm. And we did a typing tool. There was a typing one that was gamified and taught my kids, both my kids, to how to type on a computer. You know what I mean? And right, they have to make money, right? I mean, yeah, it was free to me, but there was ads and stuff. So I think you can do it, Joe, like with anything we talk about, like with the deceptive design. You know, it's like you don't have to do that portion of it. You know, you can keep that out of your design.
Yeah.
There's neutral ones, right? There's like, it's just designed to sell you more shit. Should we talk about these maybe? Like, Brad, I know you used to be a sneakerhead, right? You want to jump into that?
So
ex-sneakerhead.
Yeah. So a lot of our users or listeners might be familiar with Supreme, the clothing company. They do these drops, and it's all about manufactured rarity. Nike has an app called Sneakers, SNKRS, which I used for a while. It's a pretty beautifully designed app, and it is heavily gamified around this concept of manufactured rarity. It also uses this drop methodology where I have to use the app. Only app users can come back here at 7 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, May 24th or whatever it is, and get those sick Jordans. Like, you cannot get these things anywhere, right? And they only have like 200 pairs of them, and you know,
yep.
I used this app for a freaking year and I never got anything. And I was like a dedicated user. Oh my God, I got to have these shoes. I don't have to have these shoes, but that was the app working very well, right? Uh-huh. Unfortunately, they have the balance wrong where this is me telling Nike their business, right? For me, I abandoned the platform because I never got anything. I never got that pellet. You got to give the pellet every once in a while to get people to really use it. Uh-huh. So manufactured rarity in this case has a definitive end, I guess. There's a better way for me to put that, but you understand. All right. Some other examples here that we have are rewards and loyalty points, Starbucks being maybe a ubiquitous one that maybe some of our users are members of, stuff like that. Anyone have anything to chime in?
Is this neutral? I mean, that's, you know, caffeine, that's addiction. I don't know.
Dude,
my daughter's always trying to get it. She doesn't even drink the coffee yet. She's always trying to get those fruity drinks and those sandwiches. Wait till she gets into the coffee.
Dude, the sandwiches are garbage. Why would anyone eat?
I don't know. She's the spinach one. I don't know. I don't get it.
That's off topic. But anyway,
Pokemon Go is on here. I love it. Talk about it.
Yeah, I had a question about that. Like, well, can we talk about gamification inside of a game that's gamified? Like, or is that
topic? Yeah, inception of gaming here. I think it. I'll allow it. Yeah, I think it works. Pokemon Go was kind of an interesting experience because it was, I guess, the first widely adopted location-based gaming experience. But I think an interesting angle to talk about Pokemon Go and actually another location-based experience is that it drove a lot of weird behaviors in real life that were unintended consequences.
Right on.
So for audience members who were lucky enough to escape the destruction that was Pokemon Go, where it just took over everything for like a year and a half, it was bananas. Like, people were in the streets running through traffic trying to get a Dragonite, and it was like, this is a problem, right? Like, it was a crazy sort of thing. But that speaks again to the power of these motivational strategies. Pokemon, you have complete the set, right? And Dragonite, at least at the time, was an extraordinarily powerful and extraordinarily rare Pokemon. And when it appeared, swarms of people would show up at a virtual location to get a virtual Pokemon. And if you were standing there, it would be like, right, to get a virtual Pokemon, and it would be like a flash mob. You would be like, why are these these people here? You know,
And this just wasn't kids. This just wasn't kids. Like, I worked at downtown in L.A. at the time, and I saw grown ass adults in suits doing the same things in downtown L.A. It was like, what is that? I didn't even know at first what they were doing. The phones up in the air, running around. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, what's going on? There was a prototype system that was created by BMW that was basically another location-based driving game. Yeah. And the idea here was to challenge drivers to drive more fuel efficiently.
Seems positive. What could possibly go wrong?
Right. So the more fuel efficient you are, the more points that you get. Okay. And this speaks to sometimes things can go well or very badly, regardless of your intentions. Well, the game was so motivating that in order to save fuel, some of the test drivers started dashing through red lights because stopping at a red light would lower your fuel efficiency. So it started to drive reckless driving behaviors. So it goes to show, once you add these kind of gamification incentives to anything, it can go sideways, even if you have the best intentions.
Those dopamine centers take over. I mean, I had the same thing with my Prius. My Prius has, it had like a little meter, and it would show you when you're in that EV mode. And that seriously, for the first 2 weeks of having it, I'm like, I'm going to get this up to 60 miles per gallon. And I did, driving through Century City at like 20 miles an hour.
That was you? I almost killed you.
And then rolling down those. This is why Prius drivers are known to be horrible drivers, I think, or at least at the time they were, because we were all trying to do that. It was like, whoa, 60 miles per gallon.
Right.
I mean, this is what has, I think this has been the lesson of gamification, at least from my perspective, you know, going back to when Brad was talking about when it first started to take off and everyone was talking about it and it was a huge buzzword and now it's fallen off.
Yeah.
Yes, the word has fallen out of usage, but these practices have become ubiquitous across the many, many, many industries. They're all over the place. We just don't use the word because it's like saying transmedia. It's a little bit, you know, outdated, but it's everywhere. Yeah. And
we don't have to say it anymore because it's ingrained in every decision that we make as designers, marketers, et cetera.
Exactly. And it still drives unintended consequences. I made a joke in the notes and I know that we skipped over it, but it was like, these things can be used to drive, you know, good things like teaching kids again, how to be able to tie a knot or, you know, how to survive if they end up lost in the forest. I think that's an objective good.
Yeah.
These tools have also been used to destroy the entire self-esteem of a teenage generation in social media, because again, it is a competition for these likes and followers and retweets and stuff like that. And how's that working out for everybody?
Right.
Not so well.
Right. So, all right, guys, let's land this plane here with the rest of our sort of neutral examples. We'll do this briefly. If anyone has anything to add, feel free to jump in. American Airlines Advantage Frequent Flyer Program. That was the first one. Now all airlines do it, but I just wanted to mention that as something that is definitely gamified, an early example from 1981. I also have Foursquare listed here.
I remember that.
You guys remember Foursquare?
Can I pause this really fast?
Absolutely.
I remember I was the king of the gym at 24 Hour Fitness for like 24 hours, not even 23 hours. And then I was pissed off every time the other person knocked me off. And then eventually I was like, this is just ridiculous. Like, I'm not going to like sleep at the gym here.
Right on. Julius, you mentioned Happy Hour, Taco Tuesday, Wine Wednesdays, things like that. Anything you want to add on there?
Yeah. So these are a little bit more general, right? But if you think about, you know, going back to Mario, because I always bring it back to Mario, as you're playing your way through the level, if you take too long, what happens? Music starts going faster. You've got to get out of there. Otherwise, if you take too long, you lose, right? So here, limited time events where special circumstances are in play.
Yeah.
It's a sale, essentially, right? And it has a little bit of that playfulness added to it as well. Happy hour, Taco Tuesday, Wine Wednesday. It's a very light form of gamification, just making it feel like a fun, special moment that gets you to buy more stuff.
And now I'm hungry.
Ticking clock as the gamification element. Absolutely. loot crates and LOL surprise toys. You know, this is a recent thing, you know, that didn't exist when we were kids that I'm aware of, other than maybe baseball cards. But that's something that my daughter is a big fan of. And, you know, I have no opinion about these one way or the other. I think that they're fine. Like, she's really not disappointed with the experience, and they do a good job at that. You know?
It's interesting with this one in particular, loot crates and stuff like that, because this is coming straight out of, it's the same thing as we said with the slot machines, right?
Yeah.
It's the same mechanic. It's maybe not as aggressive as a slot machine is per se, but it's the same sort of thing. If I spend a little bit of money, maybe I'll get the thing that I want. The thing that's interesting about this is there was, I want to say a Star Wars game a couple of years ago, where they gamified, I believe it was, or they made loot crates out of characters. Yeah. So you had to like do in-game, in-app purchases in order to get a chance at getting a character. And
this
maybe you could play as a Jedi.
Julius. I'm pretty sure this was Star Wars Battlefront, the first one. And then there was so much outrage about it from the industry that they shut it down.
Yeah, it was, and it was not just the outrage. Literally, people were writing senators and being like, "I'm sorry, but this game has gambling in it."
Yeah,
and there was a threat of legislation.
Yeah,
actually, to come back, and everyone in the games industry had this huge chilling effect where it was like, "Well, wait, loot boxes are going to be classified as gambling. That means we're going to be subject to all of these rules."
Right.
So they backed the heck off of that.
It was specifically Electronic Arts, and they had their entire business wrapped around this whole system for all their games, not just the Star Wars one. And I mentioned it was the first Battlefront. I'm wrong. I think there was an element in the first Battlefront, but really it was the second Battlefront game. It launched with all this stuff, and then they had to roll it all back. Like it launched, and then within 6 months, they had to strip it all out and roll it all back and make it equitable.
Do you know what's crazy about these loot boxes? I mean, as kids, could you imagine getting your Star Wars figures and then like not knowing what was in there? Like I would wind up with like 15 Gronks, whatever his name is, in a loot box. And I'd be mad because I'd never get a Yoda. Drinks. Gunk, right.
Jawas, and
I'm like, what? Who wants that? I don't want that. I want what I want. I don't get it.
Ugnaught. I want Luke Skywalker.
I want some Gamorrean guards. Darn it!
Plus, it's literally just making more and more. Like, what's that one crate where it's like, oh, you might get like a really great Swiss Army knife and a canteen, like. Boxes
man
targeted
crate?
Towards men.
Man crates. Are they man crates?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that's a real thing?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And it's like, so every week I'm going to get like, I don't know, five pieces of crap, maybe one good thing.
Yeah.
After about 6 weeks or 6 months of that, I'm like,
yeah,
I got more junk than I need.
Wait, so you did it?
No. I never did it, I never did it because I recognized the gamification of it. It's like, oh, I might, I'll get a box every week.
Yeah.
Or a box
I gotta
every
say,
month.
I'm kind of let down, Joe, that you didn't do it. You kind of are the target audience for that. You look a little grizzly.
Yeah, I was a little
grizzly, man.
Kind of smart about it though, because I was like, if I really want one good knife, I'll spend $100 for it. I'm not going to spend $10 a month and maybe get one good one in the box, and then Sunday.
On that note, you have 47 out of 50 points on this podcast, and just 3 more points. If we land this plane, you have won the golden ticket. Okay. So, fellas, in that very rough transition, I'd like to say, how do we wrap this up by laying down some principles for people to keep in mind? And maybe I'll kick it to you, Julius. Like, while they're designing their own experiences, like, what can we do? Like, either as designers or as people experiencing these gamification situations, what do you have to say about this?
For sure, I'd break it into two bits. So, people who are building. Systems or experiences that utilize principles of gamification in one, and then just people who are out in the world who might come across some of these systems. I'll speak to that a little bit at the end. But first and foremost, like gamification is super powerful, right? Because in a way it's utilizing what motivates humans to take action and applying that in these digital experiences. The roots of the discipline are as old and as deep as the human brain itself, which means that they're really very powerful. When Joe's talking about, I'm literally ignoring a person who is sitting next to me in the room because I've got to get 1,000 points for the thing or whatever. That's a demonstration of the sheer power of this system, right? It is at its core about humans and what motivates us. So to that end, as a designer working with some of these tools, always keep in mind what your users care about, what motivates them, and focus on ways to fulfill that. Also, remember, it's a continual cycle. Focus on the loop, not just the line. And what that means is they'll create an experience that is just going to get someone to go through the cycle one time and then be done, because it's not worth it to build something that just gets people through at once. We talked about Pokemon Go earlier. That kept people in the loop for a very, very long time. But eventually,
congrats, Kelly.
It burns itself out, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing to keep in mind is that there's a diminishing rate of return when you're doing the same thing over and over again. So make sure that you're essentially putting enough carrots in there to make it worth people's time, because eventually even the most well-designed, you know, gamification loop will get boring unless, you know, there's something new, intrinsic or fun about it that keeps you kind of plugged in. Other thing to keep in mind, don't overdo it.
Yeah.
at this point, like, the internet and social media are rife with misuses of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Think of the stereotype of the person who is addicted to social media, or how we all respond like Pavlov's dog to likes and retweets or text messages and buzzes. You're really playing with the fire of human psychology. So check yourself and make sure that you take care.
Except for the Sucks podcast, you're going to want to like and retweet everything we do. Thank you.
Every That's single vital. Time. Yes. 1000%. Yeah. And I mean, that's broadly it. I think at this point we say, you've successfully reached the end of the podcast. Time to level up. It's essentially that. Just make it fun. At the end of the day, gamification is about making experiences fun. If it's not fun for you, it's not fun for the user, then you should really stop and think, why am I using this?
Yeah.
Because the answer to that question might be something that will disturb you. So keep it fun. Keep it light.
And don't be nefarious. Don't be nefarious.
Don't be evil.
Don't be evil.
I like it.
You can make money. Please make money. It's important that we make money, but don't be evil. All right, Julius, thank you so much for joining us here to talk about gamification. Let's wrap up by playing a quick game of Sucks or Doesn't Suck. Hit the theme.
Sucks. Not suck.
All right, we picked some random or not so random items for us to chime in on in real time. We're going to go round robin. Do these things suck or do they not suck? I think I said that wrong. Dave. It's supposed to be, do these things sucks or do they not sucks?
You know, Brad, this has been a topic. This has been a topic for a while because it's shitty UX, right? So is it sucks or is it not sucks is the proper way to say this, but we've never said it that way. So who cares?
Let's try it. Is this, is it sucks or is it not sucks? We'll go round robin for our thoughts. Here we go. Three random items, and we will start with, clockwise, Joe. Single-serving pudding cups. Dave, I have to tell you, you added this one, so I'm really interested to get to you. So we'll do you last. Joe, single-serving pudding cups. Do these suck or not suck?
I mean, processed plastic food kind of sucks, but at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not making my own pudding. So, you know, especially if you can get those like double layer vanilla chocolate.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
I like them. Julius?
They're pretty good. I mean, great user experience, you know, surprise and delight for sure. Maybe not so great for the earth, but on a one-to-one kind of level, very convenient.
Yeah. Dave, you got a rant here? Go for it.
Yeah, I don't got a rant. I think they kind of suck. For me, because there, and I have this problem with a lot of products, right? I have this with the boba place near my home. It's boba. Like the size, the small size is too small. And then the next size up is too big. And I'm stuck in the middle, right? So I always wind up cracking open a second one of these and then hating myself for it, right? I just need like one more spoonful in there. You know what I mean? Same thing with the boba. They only have these small ones, and then they have these huge, massive regular ones, as they call them, doing air quotes, right? And I want that middle place that I don't have. Right. That's it.
I can hear you on that.
All right. Fair enough. Moving on. Similar theme. Keurig. Keurig as a concept, as a machine, as a brand. Joe, Keurig.
Basically the same thing. Super convenient. I like to grind my own coffee. I've actually bought the little Keurig baskets to, but at the end of the day, you know, when I just need a cup of coffee, they work. They don't suck. They suck for those single use things we just talked about, but they don't suck. They don't suck.
Yeah.
It's about the user, not the earth. The earth is not in this group of people. Not that I'm against it. I think the earth, we should help.
Surely you agree. We're talking about her.
It's okay to be selfish here for a moment.
Okay, Keurig totally sucks. I mean, Keurig, the quality of the coffee is garbage, and the machines suck. The coffee's not hot enough, and it's weak sauce. It's weak sauce ass coffee. So I think it totally sucks. Would never use a Keurig. Hate it. Julius?
Yeah, not a fan. I would agree as well for all of the above mentioned reasons. And you know, the earth, man, the earth.
The earth doesn't suck.
All right. Okay. I will concede to the it hurting the earth sucks. They do have ones that you can refill. I'm not saying I use those, but I should. I'm going to say they don't suck, guys. And here's why. Like, I'm like you, Joe. I like to brew my own coffee. I have like varying taste, which, you know, depending on the type of day, I mean, the time of the day, which, you know, whether I want the Kona or whether I want the dark or I want the espresso, you know, like, but in a pinch, right? It's 3 p.m. I got a Zoom meeting in 5 minutes and I'm just asleep, right? Mm-hmm. I just drop it in there, turn it on. And it's, you know what? It's light. You can get darker coffee, Brad. They have a whole bunch of flavors and it's plenty hot enough. I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe you just got a bad batch there. Maybe you got a bad, I like it. I love it for the convenience. There are certain things that help me in a pinch. Doesn't suck.
For me, Keurig would only be acceptable if I'm in a dentist waiting room. Why should I be, you know, I guess I shouldn't be drinking, you know, coffee right before I go in to see my dentist, but I stand by it.
Oh, Brad. Yeah. Hey, well, speaking about not destroying the earth, let's jump into the next one, huh?
Finally, as always, sucks or doesn't suck, Twitter. Twitter is on this list every week, and my opinion of it changes every week. So let's start with Twitter, Joseph.
Well, my basic easy answer has always been sucks. Mm-hmm. And, well, a lot's been going on with Twitter lately, and I'm going to stick with sucks.
Cool. I got to say sucks this week. And for reasons we'll get into in a moment, Julius, any thoughts on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty bad. It's a hellscape of a website, but honestly, it could be worse. It's not bad in that it's poor. Well,
right. You will be.
You will be. No, it's more just, you know, it brings out a lot of the worst of people and a lot of like humanity's worst impulses. It has great advantages in terms of communication and like being able to let people coordinate. I mean, I may be misremembering this, but I think that Twitter was, you know, formative in social revolutions like the Arab Spring that back in the day. So I can't totally say that something sucks that provides like, you know, voices to the powerless. Yep. But also like just the insanity that happens on that website on any given day is just not healthy for any individual human. It's what you mentioned earlier. It's the to what end. Mm-hmm. Like if Twitter was tooled in such a way to make communication democratized and easy for people, then okay, there might be something to that. Obviously, you need some guardrails on there for safety issues and stuff like that. But we all know that Twitter is a microcosm and really just news and media in general. Mm-hmm. It amplifies the loudest, most disrespectful, the least thought through, most emotionally charged stuff. And that's what makes it to the top. And it's like, so the system isn't designed in a way that its end state is something that is beneficial for everyone. Maybe you might be able to find a way to systematically change that. But the way that it operates right now, it's just like the crap flows to the top. So,
yeah, right on. Julius, for background, when we started talking about Twitter, it was in the context of Ukraine. And there was a lot of great news stories coming out of and you really the people on the ground in Ukraine using Twitter as a tool for positivity. Anyway, Dave.
Okay. I thought I'd come last. Yeah, because I've got the big reveal here. I came prepared because Julius, I've always said that I like it. I've always been the sole defender, and this was prior to the war. Because my thing is, I use it as a news curator, right? So I follow a lot of reporters, and a lot of times, like Hugo Lowell, for example, I think he's in the Guardian, right? He'll post things about like the January 6th committee well before he writes his article. So he'll kind of tease these things up and it'll give me, and there'll be a dialogue between reporters, between people who are invested in this stuff. So it gives you a deeper knowledge of the news and what's going on. And for that, I love it. And to your point about the Arab Spring, also, as Brad mentioned, in Ukraine, I still follow people in Ukraine who are posting from their daily life. They're keeping a war journal. Now imagine this. We read war journals from World War II, and it's fascinating. I'm reading it live in real time now. And there's a bit of voyeurism to it, but there's also like, there's also a positive element to it, because people, these folks are asking, hey, here's a place you could do a GoFundMe or something of that nature. And then she's posting, hey, I sent these packages to this person. Her name is such and such. These are her children. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. The reason I came prepared to say it sucks is obviously we skipped the news. But if we did do the news, it'd be all Elon, right? And my problem with Elon Musk is we are, again, rewarding bad behavior. It's kind of like, you know, Donald Trump spoke his mind. He says what he thinks. So we gave him the presidency. And now it's like Elon Musk has a problem with people being censored on Twitter. So we handed him Twitter, right? And to me, that's very problematic, because we're speaking about the voices of people. And now he's like, oh, it's a town square. It's the virtual town square. Okay, so what did you do? Oh, I bought it and made it private. And went private with it, right? So there's no board. There's no. So my problem is, I'm not going to say it sucks yet, because the deal hasn't gone completely through. But the second I start noticing things, I am ready to say it sucks.
The reason why I'm really disappointed about this is that we don't seem to have a correct or common understanding of the term free speech in this country. And I think that that's like, you know, what we need to tee up as its own episode, or I think we've talked about doing a multi-part series on this, actually, because free speech, we don't seem to understand what that is. I have my definition on it, and it's not what Elon Musk's definition of it is, clearly.
Right, right. The Elon Musk's and the conservative side is that this is a free speech issue, is what I think Brad's talking about. And when in fact it's not, because Twitter is its own company. No shirt, no shoes, no service, right? I can kick you out of my store. And that's what they always kind of muddle up. And it's dangerous, because then you're taking real free speech things that they don't care about. Like, for example, look at all the voting rights that they're passing in many of these states where they're taking people's votes away. Those are free speech issues. You know, your right to express yourself through the voting booth. I mean, but this is a big issue.
All right. So that was Sucks or Don't Suck. Twitter sucks. Sorry, guys. Julius, again, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we wrap for the day?
Not much, you know, other than to say keep an eye on the streaming entertainment space, especially for kids in the next few years. I would say the streaming wars are heating up quite a bit. If you guys have been keeping your eyes on the trades lately, and the war for your kids' eyeballs is a key front in this battle. Platforms like VR and the metaverse aren't quite ready for prime time, but, you know, I'm a big fan of creative disruption, and it's really the name of the game when it comes to this industry. So don't sleep on it.
Julius, I hope that we can have you back someday, talk about more fun things and more crazy topics. And I'm sure we have a lot more to discuss. So again, thank you so much. And that is our episode. Thank you to our users for listening to the Sucks Podcast. We are wishing you health, a well-designed life, and good experiences.
Hear, hear. Insert banter here.
banter.
What is our banter, Brad? I thought you'd have a prompt.